everyone. This is Joseph G with the good news of 12-Step Recovery, Rum Radio, and rumradio.org. I'd like to acknowledge our sponsors, Recovery Today Magazine, recoverytoday.net, for posting our article, Spirit Contra Spiritum, Spirit in the Ravages of Spirits. And in WNAH out of Nashville, Tennessee, Hoyt Carter and Tony the Horse, who allows us an hour of airtime to go out to their listening public and their clients and customers in an idea that this is a public service and this is a good work to help people understand the addiction of alcoholism and addiction itself. I'd like to acknowledge our co-host tonight, Harold B., who works in the family recovery area. He goes around in the local vicinity in the county helping distressed families, distressed from drugs and mental illness, trying to bring them back on track. I think it's a wonderful work. I believe the family is the centerpiece, the core, the single unit of society, and so as the family goes, so does the society. Harold?
Nice to be with you tonight, Joseph, and I hope some of our listeners will get a lot of value and even call in. You're welcome to call in and join the conversation, ask questions or make comments, and I just want to take a moment to acknowledge what Joseph's doing with his website and this radio broadcast. His dedication is to the important task of working with others. That will keep us sober when nothing else will. And so his website is totally dedicated to that. He spent thousands of dollars on his website, and of course, it makes no money whatsoever. And he does that as his way of giving back, and I'm here for the same reason, to give back. I really owe my life to the program, and the thing that seems to be slipping in today's rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is Step 12 and Chapter 7, Working with Others, and I'm not sure why it's slipping, but we hear less about it. And it is so vitally important. So I acknowledge Joseph for giving, and I acknowledge everyone that works with other people, and that is the real heart and soul of the AA program, and I want to do what I can to promote that. So thanks for having me on, Joseph.
You're welcome, Harold. The call-in number is 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. And tonight, something special. The fifth caller will be designated as number five. tonight, we're going to be doing the, I have it listed on the website, is Quad, Tradition 4.
And Joseph, let me just take a moment to mention There's an additional reward for being caller number five. I will write that name on the whiteboard here. I have a whiteboard and a dry erase marker, and your name will go up, at least your first name will go up on our whiteboard tonight. How about that?
I can hardly wait. You know, a little tip before we get started. I got some survival news today. If you're ever attacked by a group of clowns, go for the juggler.
Okay, all right. I probably have a matching joke, which I will save for the second half hour.
Okay. Last night was very productive. I ended up going to three meetings. I went to Lamplighters at noon, which I never go to noon, and it worked out really well. And Then I went to Lambda, which is the gay AA. I kind of like Lambda in the sense of their open-mindedness. I like the open-mindedness. I feel very comfortable in an area of open-mindedness, and I'm not homophobic whatsoever. As far as I'm concerned, they're just fellow brothers and sisters in the recovery program. I make no accusation. Matter of fact, I look at the gay community like I would look at the Irish community. You know why?
Tell me.
Because when Irish hearts are smiling, all the world is bright and gay.
There you go.
I tell when I shared in there, I tell them I feel like I'm a sharp knife in a drawer of sharp knives. And regular AA is a little blunted after the experience. And then
there
after
you go.
I went to the candlelight at Primary Purpose. And as I'm walking out, I was a little late getting there. I made really a lot of good contacts at Lambda. They were real interested in what I had to say. They loved getting the cards. It was a small group, very intimate group. I solicited a couple writers to see if they would like to write to put on the website and to the Lambda experience. And they were very interested in that. Then I went to Primary, and then I'm walking up the stairs, and this fellow, Angelo, comes out. I'm almost all the way up the stairs. And he said, oh, great. He says, I needed somebody to chair the meeting. He says, nobody
terrific.
Wanted to chair the... Pardon me, did you say something?
I said, terrific.
Yeah, he said, and I just walked right in. I was about 5 minutes late, almost 10 minutes late. And he walked right in and sat down, and I got the meeting going. And the one lady came up to me after the meeting, and she said, you had me when you said hello. she asked me, would you tell your story at one of the local groups?
Oh, that's terrific feedback.
Yeah. A lot of people were excited about it, and of course I got the Rum Radio out because I put in the effort. So it's a hard way to get it out, but, you know, it's one time will make this thing go out. And it's good information. You take what you need and you leave the rest. These are tools. The website is about tools. How many of us have enough tools? You ever work on a car? If you ever worked on a car, the one thing you'll always know, there's always a tool for every job. And I try to put as many tools as possible into the website, and you can find a tool that'll work for you. Okay, tonight's quad, Tradition 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. That's the short version. The long version, with respect to its own affairs, each AA group should be responsible to no other authority than its own conscience. But when its plans concern the welfare of neighboring groups also, those groups ought to be consulted, and no group, regional committee, or individual should ever take any action that might greatly affect AA as a whole without conferring with the trustees of the General Service Board, that's the GSO, on such issues. Our common welfare is paramount. Autonomy is a $10 word but in relation to us, it means very simply that every AA group can manage its affairs exactly as it pleases, except when AA as a whole is threatened. Comes now the same question raised in Tradition 1. Isn't such liberty foolishly dangerous? I wrote this. We're a bunch of rabble and prone to squabble, all looking for the catbird seat, and anarchy reigns supreme. With so many competing voices, who could possibly be heard over the din? That one is God. May you hear him now. Over the years, every conceivable deviation from our 12 steps and traditions has been tried. That was sure to be. since we are so largely a band of ego-driven individualists, children of chaos. We have defiantly played with every brand of fire, only to emerge unharmed and, we think, wiser. These very deviations created a vast process of trial and error, which, under the grace of God, has brought us to where we stand today. And I have this. Chaos in the world brings uneasiness, but it also allows the opportunity for creativity and growth. Tom Barrett. Bill W., every group has the right to be wrong. Blame is just a lazy person's way of making sense out of chaos. Doug Copeland. Harold?
Yes, this principle, this tradition, I'm reminded that they arrived at these traditions not through just casual thought, and these are not the ideas of just one man, but they tried first one thing and then another and then yet a third and a fourth, and these traditions have been hammered out on the anvil of hard experience. They've learned the hard way, and now we can take advantage of their multi-layered learning. And it's kind of a two-pronged approach in that we need for groups to communicate with one another in regard to what they're planning to do, what they're doing, things that influence another group. Many people, now that we're so mobile, such a mobile society, will go, as you did today, three or four different groups a week or maybe even a day. And so what I enjoy most about Alcoholics Anonymous is the continuity all across the country and in other countries. I've been to meetings in many, many places, and they're always wonderfully the same. It's a leaderless meeting. For those of you who may not know a lot about AA meetings, there is a chairperson, but that's not a position that offers any real prestige. You're a servant of the groups. It's not your meeting. It's the group's meeting, and you facilitate, and that leadership rotates so that first one person, then another will take that position. So there's a minimum of ego trips going on, and the groups are run in a similar fashion. There are different kinds of meetings: speakers meetings, topic meetings, big book meetings, as Joseph mentioned earlier, a meditation meeting, a candlelight meeting, which is focusing on step 11 and meditation. And so there's a wonderful continuity across the country, and it's nice. I enjoy knowing what to expect when I get to a meeting, and that is super valuable, because people come in and they come back, and they, for me, that's what was very convincing and very helpful for my recovery, is that I could count on that consistency. I think there's a hunger in people for consistency, and there's very little consistency in life. A lot of families have given up the evening meal. That used to be a wonderful, consistent activity for people. In many, many places, the people say that teenagers have adopted the mall as their family, because there's that consistency. The Orange Julius stand and the Cinnabon, and that smell of the cinnamon rolls and so forth, that's taken over what used to be a consistent family experience. So so that's one part of it, is that all the groups have that consistent autonomy. Then the other side of it, which we'll get at in the reading, is that we act autonomously, and there's no governing body telling us what to think. So let's continue on, Joseph.
Yeah, thanks, Harold. I had been into a lot of three meetings is unusual for me. Usually, if I'll do two sometimes, and that's not very often, usually once, probably average 3-4 a week. But yesterday was kind of unusual. I went primarily to promote, you know, Rum Radio. A lot of the times I go to some of these meetings, not because I need a meeting or I want a meeting, is because I have another agenda. And, of course, by doing this work, I have some good information to also get, and I get information all the time. You know, Harry Truman said that once you think you know it all, that's when you really start to learn. I had been to AA meetings all over the United States and some foreign countries, including Mississippi. And what I found is that the common thread is recovery. That's no one does it perfectly. Nobody does it like the home group. And the reason why is that that's the place where you first got sober. So it got you sober doing this particular format. And so no one else does it right, because what you've embraced is common and like you said, familiar. When AA's traditions were first published in 1946, that was a year before I was born. So that makes it, what, 66 years ago, between 65 and 66 years ago, the traditions. Now, the big book came out, what, 1935, 7? You know?
Right.
This is years later, and of course, if you read the beginning of the article on the steps, Dr. Bob had a hard time with it. He didn't believe that these were necessary. Bill wanted these because he wanted to ensure, this was insurance for AA, fledgling AA. In 1945, we had become sure that an AA group could stand almost any amount of battering. We saw that the group, exactly like the individual, must eventually conform to whatever tested principles would guarantee survival. We had discovered that there was a perfect safety in the process of trial and error. So confident of this had we become that the original statement of AA traditions carried the significant sentence, any two or three alcoholics gathered together for sobriety may call themselves an AA group, provided they have, as a group, they have no other affiliation. For those two or three are gathered together in my name, there I am in the midst of them. From the King James Version of the Bible. So you can see where this came from. Some groups rise and some groups fall, only to reemerge again, bruised and battered, but wiser from the fall. And some rise again, not at all. This meant, of course, that we had been given the courage to declare each AA group an individual entity, strictly reliant on its own conscience as a guide to action. That group conscience is the collective personalities of the people who attend that group. In charting this enormous expanse of freedom, we found it necessary to post only two storm signals. A group ought not to do anything which could greatly injure AA as a whole, nor ought it affiliate itself with anything or anybody else. There would be real danger should we commence to call some groups wet, others dry, still others Republican or Communist, and yet others Catholic or Protestant. The AA group would have to stick to its course or be hopelessly lost. Sobriety had to be its sole objective. In all other respects, there was perfect freedom of will and action. every group had the right to be wrong. Got a little story for you. Once upon a midnight dreary, a moral indignant had come upon an AA group that had a platform of wife swapping. Wholly incensed, he cried foul. Then this depravity would untimely give AA a black eye. Bill, what were we to do? Bill asked the most pertinent of questions, are they staying sober? Well, yes, they are, was the emphatic reply that leads us to Bill's most famous retort that every group had the right to be wrong. If it was for me, I would have wanted to be invited to the next group conscience. Harold?
Well, that's fascinating. I'm so grateful that when I arrived, all these traditions were in place, and they didn't bring into it any politics, any religion. Actually, we go to great lengths to mention that there's a difference between being spiritual and being religious. Thank goodness, because I came in 24 years ago, and everyone was so tolerant of me, and over the process and seeing that and seeing how much value people have gotten from different church experiences. I've visited churches, and I've actually, my sponsor told me you cannot criticize something you haven't read, so I started to read the Bible, and it's really turned my life around and back upright again. And that was all because of this tradition and the fact that there was no other affiliation, and I was free to come and go and ask questions and explore, and it really really worked out great for me. Go ahead, Joseph.
Thanks, Harold. I think it's good to remember the time frame. So 1946, what happened? It was just the recent end of World War II. But they were kicking this around during the war. And during the war and prior to the war, all the divisiveness that was going on, the Communist Party and the Nazi Party and the Socialist Party and all of that, all this hodgepodge, and feelings were really hot, and people were very passionate about these different areas in their life and willing to kill for them. So we had to, like orphans from a storm, had to leave that outside. That was part of the lesson, I believe, that was learned from the traditions, was the social environment that was going on at the time these were formed and agreed to. When AA was still young, lots of eager groups were forming. In a town we'll call Middleton, a real crackerjack had started up. The townspeople were hot as firecrackers about it. Stargazing, the elders dreamed of innovations. They figured the town needed a great big alcoholic center, a kind of pilot plant AA groups could duplicate everywhere. Beginning on the ground floor, there would be a club. In the second story, they would sober up drunks and hand them currency for their back debts. The third deck would house an educational project, quite non-controversial. Of course, in imagination, that gleaming center was to go up several stories more, but that would do for a start. This would take all a lot of money. Other people's money. What do they call them? OPM? Other people's money.
Yep, OPM.
Believe it or not, wealthy townsfolk bought the idea. You begin saving the world by saving one man at a time. All else is grandiose romanticism or politics. Charles Bukowski. As no road is so rough as those that have just been mended, so no sinner are so hell-bent on your conversion as those have just experienced immersion. I like that.
I like that.
With flags flying and banners unfurled, reminiscence of the temperance movement of a long time ago, with grandiose design and with our hearts on our sleeve, we were off to save the world on the other guy's dime. An easier, softer way was mentioned, and the beginning of the one-stop sober shop was invented. There were, though, a few conservative dissenters among the alcoholics. They wrote the foundation, AA's headquarters in New York, wanting to know about this sort of streamlining. They understood that the elders, just to nail things down good, were about to apply to the foundation for a charter. These few were disturbed and skeptical. The only way to make sure people you agree with can speak is to support the rights of people you don't agree with. Eleanor Holmes Norton. Let me say that again. The only way to make sure people you agree with can speak is to support the rights of people you don't agree with. I don't believe in astrology. I'm a Sagittarian, and we're skeptical. Arthur Clarke. Of course, there was a promoter in the deal, a super promoter. By his eloquence, he allayed all fears, despite advice from the foundation that it could issue no charter. And the venture, which mixed an AA group with medication and education, had come to sticky ends elsewhere. To make things safer, the promoter organized three corporations and became president of them all. Freshly painted, the new center shone. The warmth of all spread through the town. So things began to hum. To ensure foolproof, continuous operation, 61 rules and regulations were adopted. If the path to hell is paved with good intention, surely the path to heaven is paved with humility, acceptance, and a timely sense of prevention. A mediocre idea that generates enthusiasm will go further than any great idea that inspires no one. Mary Kay Ash. Enthusiasm. Inspiration is built by a divine or superhuman power. Ecstasy, hence the conceit of divine possession and revelation of being directly subject to some divine impulse. Exaltation of soul. The definition of a sale, the transference of enthusiasm. Signed, sealed, and delivered, the new ship of recovery was launched with 61 rules of tar and a pitch of regulations that would not seal the planking from the coming tempest fury. Harold?
Yes, I can just imagine this. All these rules, this smacks of an earlier time, you know, when the Jews developed, what was it, 613 rules that they lived by.
Yeah, I think it was that. Yeah, that's the number of the tassels at the end of their neck hanging. What do they call that? Their scarf, you know, the scarf that the Hebrews wear. There's tassels on the bottom. There's 613 tassels. Each one signifies one of the laws. And consequently,
yes.
There's, what's the fruit? Pomegranate. Ever notice pomegranates? They're pomegranates on their religious garments.
Oh.
You know why pomegranate?
No.
If you cut a pomegranate in half and you cut it, counted the seed, they would average 613 seeds.
That's interesting.
I'll continue. But alas, the bright scene was not long in darkening. Confusion replaced serenity. It was found that some drunks yearned for education, but doubted if they were alcoholics. Free education. The personality defects of others could be cured maybe with a loan. I tell people that if you give an alcoholic money, don't consider it a loan, consider it a gift. If you get the money back, consider it a re-gift. Some were club-minded, but it's just a question of taking care of the lonely heart. Sometimes the swarming applicants would go for all three floors. Some would start at the top and come through to the bottom, become club members. Others started in the club, pitched the binge, were hospitalized, and graduated to education on the third floor. It was a beehive of activity, all right, but unlike a beehive, it was a confusion compounded. An A group as much as such simply couldn't handle this sort of project. All too late, that was discovered. They came to the inevitable explosion, something like that day the boiler burst in Wormley's clapboard factory. A chill choked damp of fear and frustration fell over the group. An unwatched pot always boils. You know why? Because the lid's on. Harold?
There you go. Yes. Yeah, let's continue.
And the lid blew sky high. It's not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well. Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants, and do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can out of the show? Is he not, even his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I took that out of the big book to amplify what was going on.
Interesting.
When that lifted, a wonderful thing had happened. The head promoter wrote the foundation office. He said he wished he paid more attention to AA experience, that he did something else that was to become an AA classic. He went on a little card about a golf score size, little golf score, you know, when you play a golf, you know, the little scorecard. The cover
yes.
read, Middleton Group Number 1, Rule Number 62. Once the card was unfolded, a single pungent sentence leaped to the eye. Don't take yourself too damn seriously. Life is much too important to take seriously, Oscar Wilde. Harold?
Yes, and I think, what is it, page 62 has some encouragement that we need to laugh. We need to laugh at ourselves. You know, Red Skelton's humor didn't degrade anyone. We weren't laughing at anyone. We were laughing with Red Skelton at himself. And that's, well, there we go. It's, yeah, rule 62. Don't take yourself too seriously. So on my birthday, the 28th of December, every year, where there were some wonderful people in Beaverton, Oregon, where I got clean and sober. And actually, the man, John Jay, used to be a drinking buddy of my dad. My dad didn't really go to meetings or really get... He got sober, but he never got recovery. But one of his drinking buddies was John Jay, and John had a wonderful family, and my brother knew his daughter, and it was just a wonderful teamwork. And so, and his wife's name was Mary. So John and Mary and I would triple lead the meeting on the 28th of December on our birthday, and what a blast we had. There was a lot of joy. Now, new people are always shocked about all the laughter. a lot of them come in with behind a terrible catastrophe of some sort, and when they hear us laughing and joking around, they're really taken aback at first. But I think that's so important. That was a very attractive feature of AA when I arrived, is that these are people that know how to have some fun, to take themselves lightly, to laugh at themselves, and that really is part of what kept me coming back and kept me working on the steps. My sponsor had a good sense of humor, and so did the group, and it really worked out well. So the that was an important part of my recovery is telling some jokes and being able to poke fun at ourselves. It's very important. Now, in the as we're getting to the near the end of the article, do you think we'll have time to address the clubs that have formed and how the clubs fit in with Tradition 4?
Yeah, we'll have enough time. Yeah, 4 is kind of, you know, the longest tradition to write to was, you'll never believe it, it was Tradition 7. That was the longest one. It was the hardest one. It had so many different ins and outs. Well, money is, it's about the money. You know, who gets it, where does it come from, where does it go? And their experiences and all of that. The grandiosity about money and all of that. Rockefeller and dimes, and it's an interesting tradition. Oscar Wilde, I was going to say, humor is a rubber sword. It makes a point without drawing blood.
There you go.
Oscar Wilde said, life is much too important to take seriously. But we are in a glum lot. If newcomers could see no joy or fun in our existence, they wouldn't want it. We absolutely insist on enjoying life. That's from page 132, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We laugh. A matter of fact, right tonight, if I wasn't on the radio right now, I'd be down at Spring Branch. They're having their spring fling. They had it yesterday and all day today, and I couldn't make it. I had, you know, I was busy last night with those meetings, and today I was with my granddaughter. So I was tied up having fun with my granddaughter. She's such a sweetheart. We went to, she's 7 years old. I took her to a funeral museum.
All right. Tell me more about that.
The funeral museum is interesting. I get a lot from my granddaughter, and actually it helps me. Dealing with a 7-year-old helps me as a sponsor. Because sometimes the new alcoholic coming in is like a 7-year-old, demanding and precocious. My granddaughter, though, she's getting used to me. We had a little bout. I was about 10 minutes late, and never make a lady wait. And she was beside herself for a little while. But it's interesting, that whole scenario. It helps me in humility also with her dad. I have to toe a certain line with him, so I remain having access to my granddaughter. And my granddaughter also is an amends, in a sense. My youngest daughter died of this disease, and this is her daughter. And she was, I think, 3 years old, just about 2 or 3 years old when my daughter died. And they were having a hard time trying to explain to a 3-year-old that her mom died. Of course, you're not, you know, how do you tell a 2 or 3 year old that their mother's dead? So they were talking.
Wow, that is a huge question. So tell me a bit more about.
Yeah, we have abandonment issues going on, and how do you explain that to a child? And it was interesting. What happened was that the way it came down was that she said she was in her sandbox, and that Jesus came to her, and Jesus told her that her mom was with him, and everything was okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was just spontaneously sometime after the funeral?
Yeah. I'd say maybe a couple months after, about 6 months after the funeral. We're still trying to figure, you know, your mommy's sick, you know, she's not, they didn't know what to tell her. And that was it. And then she finally said, I know my mommy's with Jesus. Jesus came to me and told me that she was okay.
Oh, my goodness. That's wonderful.
Yeah, the kid's a very spiritual child, too. I like to give, not all the time, most of the time, I give alms at the gate. You know what that means? I'll give a dollar or two to the guys on the street. That's really just what people tell you not to do that. You know, I do it because it's alms at the gate. I don't judge them whether they're going to take that money and go around the block to their Rolls Royce, or they're going to go to the corner store and buy a beer. I give them the money because I think that it helps me to do the right thing. I don't judge. Give them a couple bucks. And to me, that's alms at the gate. Did they plan in at some time in their life to be a beggar? I don't think so. So who are they scamming? There was a guy today, and I gave him a couple dollars, and I try to chat with him as much as I can on the road, and I said, how you doing? I asked, you know, how you doing? He said, not too good today, and he says, but I'm happy. No teeth in his mouth, and, you know, living on the street. He said, but I'm happy. And I says, you know what Zig Ziglar said? I says, if you don't think you're having a great day, just try missing one. And he laughed. And I'm driving away, and my granddaughter says, she comes up with the most profound stuff sometimes. She says, you know, that was very Christian of you to do that.
She is a spiritual little girl. Wow.
Yeah. So I go, well, thank you. I says, what was the most important thing that I gave that man? She said, well, the money. I says, no, Claire, I made him laugh, which was more valuable than the money.
Absolutely, I agree, totally.
Yeah, I acknowledged him as a person and made him laugh. I took his burden away, even if just for a moment. Oh, yeah.
That's right. I have the privilege of working with groups of very poor, mentally ill people in the third ward of Houston. And today I had a few minutes to sit down, and this one particular man who's quite difficult to understand, I think it may be some multiple sclerosis mixed in with various, his diagnosis is quite complex. He's very difficult to understand when he talks, but he loves to talk. And so I sat next to him and looked him in the eyes, and I could make out some of his words. And as I listened and repeated the words that I could, and actually he began to put together a story, and he likes to watch Crime Stoppers, and so we talked about some of those characters on Crime Stoppers, but the the way his eyes lit up, because someone was taking a few minutes to sit down with him, talk to him, look him in the eye. It was, you know, those simple little human kindnesses. Sometimes it's very, very, very important, I think. You never know which ones are the important ones. How long has it been since I told the story about the day I was washing windows? Do you remember that one?
No, I don't.
There was a man in a wheelchair. I was in college and making money by doing window cleaning. And this day I was at an apartment complex, and every year I did the same apartment complex. And when I climbed up the ladder and washed this one window, the man inside, who was in a wheelchair, motioned for me to come around and come in. He needed to talk to me, and I thought, uh-oh, what have I done? Because I was there every year. And I always wore a uniform, a white shirt, white jeans when I did my work, and I tried to be pleasant and smile at people that's the way I am. Well, when I got to this man's door, he said, you're the one who washed the windows last year, aren't you? And I thought, uh-oh, you know. But
he screwed
I said,
up.
Yes. Yeah, I thought maybe it was that, but I said, yes, I was here. And he said, well, I just wanted to thank you because I was having a really rough time. I was facing a surgery. I was really contemplating not going on anymore. I had asked God for a sign. Should I take my life or should I have this surgery and give it a try? And right at that moment, I looked up, and you popped up in the window wearing white and smiling, and I took that as my sign not to commit suicide. So you never know when something as simple as a smile can actually save a life. I was...
He thought you were an angel.
I was an angel, I guess. And the
another
man...
you were an angel. See, that's the thing. It wasn't that he thought you were an angel. You were an angel.
I was, yeah. Yep. And we
were
at a meeting
angel.
one night, a man said that he was really down and out. One of the first meetings he came to, there was someone at the door shaking hands and saying welcome, and that turned his life around. So there used to be greeters at the meetings that I went to. I think the sponsors assigned their sponsees to that task. Stand by the door, shake everybody's hand when they come in, and welcome them. And somehow that's gone by the wayside, and I think we should bring it back, because there's one man in the Northwest, and that act by that greeter really changed his life. Sometimes it's the small things. Joseph?
Thank you for that, Harold. I have this on, I want to send out an email on one of my sites. It's, who redeemeth thy life from destruction, who crowneth thee with loving kindness and tender mercies. And sometimes we have to be the provider of those tender mercies. It doesn't have to be these grandiose plans. Sometimes all they need to be is a kind gesture, a smile, a handshake, a look in the eye, an acknowledgement that they're here too, riding this rock around the sun. And the reason why I thought it was a good idea, and she was excited, she likes to go to museums, and she told me last week, she says, you know, Pop, she says, I love having art in my head. So she likes the museums and the art. So the going to the funeral, like I took her to the King Tut's tomb, you know, the exhibit to and always been explaining to her that everybody dies, getting her used to the idea that she wasn't abandoned by her mother. This was just a natural thing that happens. This happens to everybody. And I think it's important for small children to understand that, that we're very fragile creatures. This wasn't an intentional act. So my I never got a chance to make my nine-step amends to my daughter. I kept planning on it and never got around to it, and she died. And as part of that amends process on step nine, I try to be the very best grandfather I can be to her daughter. Harold?
That is wonderful. I'm so warmed by your description of that. It really means a lot to me to hear that. Very touching.
Well, this is the fruits we get from working a program. People who don't understand this, when they hear those stories, this is not something I normally would have considered. I would have been very bitter, an angry person for my losses, and now I see where I can learn from them and pack back into the stream of life something positive. This is not my natural nature. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous has given me a new set of new pair of glasses. I look at life differently, and of course, I study scripture all the time. But that's me, and to me, that kind of goes hand in hand with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that's me. I don't expect anybody else to know or do what I do. When I have a new sponsee, if he's not sure what God looks like or feels like, I said, okay, when we pray, let's just address it to whom it may concern. It's a spiritual kindergarten, folks. We got to start off small, and wherever you go is between you and God. But I know this, when we're in the service of our fellow beings, are we not in the service of our God? And when we're in that service and in that moment, are we not divorced from self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity? And in that moment and in that service, is that not when we make our conscious contact with our Creator, who lives from moment to moment, eternity to eternity, life everlasting? The magic words in AA is action and more action, for faith without works is dead. Let's see, we're coming to the end. Let's see if we need to finish this up on the tradition. We laugh, dance, and play. We are now present for a life that we nearly forfeit to drugs and alcohol. We are like a group of shipwrecked survivors finding community in a common peril. We find love and service the panacea for all our ills. As we grow spiritually, we become the men and women that our dogs always thought we were. Thus it was that under Tradition 4, an A group had exercised its right to be wrong. Moreover, it had performed a great service for Alcoholics Anonymous because it had been humbly willing to apply the lesson it learned. It had picked itself up with a laugh and gone on to better things. Even the chief architect, standing on the ruins of his dream, could laugh at himself. And that it is the very acme of humility. Humility is when every man and woman and child become your teacher. How few the wise, how great the fool, for all have a tale to tell, some for good and some for ill. It's discouraging to make a mistake, but it's humiliating when you find out you're so unimportant that nobody noticed it. Chuck Dale.
There you go.
Isn't that good? Yeah, I scoured the internet for some of these sayings. I thought they were kind of pertinent, and they put a little bump to the understanding. But I see with the groups, I think that we've come a little ways away from that. I think the traditions are not being adhered to as much as I would like, although I'm not running the show We are a bunch of anarchists, and every group is autonomous. But I think every group and every group conscience, every group that every club that has a becomes a corporation is another term for that. But they're a board. They're not. They don't. It's not a group conscience. Should adopt the traditions as an agreement of procedure. It was in a meeting, I think we spoke about this, Doug, there was a fella came in, a lady that were drug addicts, and he questioned them, and it's funny, somebody told me someone did the same thing at Post Oak almost at the same time, and someone had indicated that he was trying to be as kind as he possibly could, but he let them know that they would be best served somewhere else. NA or CA, whatever their drug of choice was. And that always comes with a price when you do that in a meeting. That's not something to be shared in a meeting. Now, that's good information, no doubt. They might need that instead of AA, which is fine. But it's not to be said in the meeting. If you feel that's important, you go talk to them one-on-one. We have nobody's in charge here. So you're just as much not in charge as the next guy. So you go up and tell them. You don't have to make a platform of understanding to bellow in a group. You just go tell the person, and the traditions we'll be getting to, you're an AA member if you say so. That's all desire to stop drinking. We always use that because that's the short form of the tradition. But the other tradition says you're an AA member if you say so. So you don't even have to be an alcoholic. You don't have to be a drug addict. You have to have no other affiliation. If you say you're a member, guess what? You're a member. That's as simple as it gets. It takes away all the other baloney.
That's so important.
I think some folks forget that. You know, we're not here. We're not judge. We're not judge, Judy, or executioner. You know, like we don't make those judgment calls, or I don't make those judgment calls. I'll speak for myself. It's not my business to do that. If the person has a problem, he's welcome in. If he can resolve the problem, they're fine. If he can't, he'll leave on his own. I threaten to fire a sponsee. The only time they're tentative with me is in the beginning. I give them certain things to do. If they can't do it initially, I usually suggest that they go find somebody else. But once I take them under my wing and we get started, that's it. If I don't fire them after that. I threaten to fire them, but I won't do that. What I usually experience is that if they're not willing to do the work, eventually they'll fire themselves. So I take the easy route. When I do a meeting, I do the same way. I do a volunteer meeting. I open it up for 5 minutes, and I don't speak again unless it's something directly out of the big book that needs to be read that might amplify something that was said. But other than that, I don't speak again. And I told them last night when I did the meeting, I said, okay, there's 30 people in the room. I said, and you count the number of the committees that we have going around in everybody's head, we have a cast of thousands. Somebody will talk.
So. Yeah, that's right. Well, we're coming down to the end of the regular broadcast.
Yes. Do you have any last thoughts?
Well, we've had a great conversation tonight, and I really, really appreciate being part of disseminating this important information. Thanks, Joseph.
You're welcome, Harold. And I'd like, Rum Radio is now in 118 foreign countries, including Mississippi. We just went over 1,600 towns, cities, and villages, and over 99,000, approaching 100,000 hits to the website. So this is a good work. If you get an opportunity, dial in rumradio.org. The archives will be made available. I think you'll enjoy what you hear, and have a good night. Thanks, Harold.
You're welcome. Good night.
Good night.